Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Hello and welcome to Life's a Banquet. It is a podcast. You already know that. It's about the highs and lows of all things edible, spreadable, and pourable with me, your host, Chevy Chase.
And me, your host, the cat from Christmas Vacation that gets stuck in the Christmas box.
The cat that gets burned through the floor in cat shape with its arms and legs spread out wide.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, that
funny.
Was just a stunt, though. I didn't die in the making of that.
Oh, amazing. There was a stunt cat. You're perfectly fine. That's incredible. And you look great.
Thank you.
For a burned cat.
Well, the stunt cat died. I lived.
Okay, got it. Hello, Nicole. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
You know what? I'd say I'm above average. I feel great. I feel fine. I had an exciting thing happen this week. I'm very famous now, and I'm going to have to charge you for this episode.
Me?
Yeah, all of you. Everyone's going to pay up, bitches. I was featured in the motherfucking New Yorker this week. It was a great honor, in all seriousness. Very great honor. So wonderful. The New Yorker is not failing. I'm sorry. The New Yorker is better than ever. The New York Times, okay. But anyway, no, it was super fun. Zaza got reviewed in the New Yorker. Thank you so much to Hannah Goldfield, who wrote the article. And yeah, I'm doing really good. It was a really fun weekend celebrating.
Great.
Yes. Thank you for your congratulations. I appreciate it.
Oh, I didn't know I had to congratulate you on air in addition to congratulating you when it actually happened.
Please publicly congratulate me. I'd appreciate
congratulations.
It.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Oh, my God. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. So how are you doing? Were you in any magazines this weekend?
Well, what if I was, bitch? I wouldn't be bragging about it. I can keep it to myself.
Well, you're a better person than I am. So what's going on with you? What have you been doing?
Not a whole lot. Been working. We've been really busy at work for some reason. Don't know why.
And well, getting nice out.
Well, not here. It was nice the last 2 days. It's about we're having another snowstorm this week.
You know,
it's 60 degrees today, and it's going to be like 23 for the high tomorrow.
Oh, maron. Oh, Becky and I got stuck in what was described to us by our phones this weekend as a snow squall.
Oh, right. The white squall.
A white squall.
A real. What was it? Was it a real squall? Snowstorm?
It was a fucking squall. In fact, the squall was so strong that it literally blew Becky over, and she crumpled up like a fucking, I don't know, like a paper airplane.
So squall refers to a wind, then.
Yes, that's correct. I believe the squall is the wind. High
so
wind.
So it's not snow, then.
Well, I think a snow squall is snowy, but I believe can you have like a rain squall? Al Roker, please, if you're listening, which we know you are, call into the show.
Well, did it snow?
Yeah, sure did. Out of nowhere, of surprise, sneaky, deadly squall.
Were these like, would we call these gale force winds?
I would. I would definitely call it a gale force wind.
Well, gale force gale? Wind. And what is she doing out there with the wind?
It's Oprah's best friend. And she's like, I will not be overshadowed. So she just blows and blows. Everybody knows.
So it was like dangerously high winds and also snow.
Freakishly high, enough to blow over a fairly lanky grown woman, but still, I mean, she literally blew over from the wind. It was one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life.
What did you do? You couldn't save her because you could have been blown over yourself.
I laughed and laughed, and I ran right past her into safety. Just left her there for dead. She died, actually. Sorry, I meant to tell you. I was busy bragging about my New York article, but I should have started with the fact that Becky died in a snow squall.
So R.I.P. How much snow did you guys get?
Not a lot. We were upstate. I had to like drive up to write an article on this hotel and she did the photographs. And so we're upstate and everything was going perfectly fine until out of nowhere, a squall descended upon us.
Well, I knew that there was a squall coming because a lot of people who live in New York were posting about it on Instagram.com, like, ready to stay home for the squall.
Oh, a squall happened in New York as well.
Right.
Oh, interesting. I thought it was just like a country squall, but really it was a, what a large, vast, far-reaching squall.
But also, are you saying then that there was no snow in New York when you arrived home?
No. Didn't see a single or married flake of snow in New York.
Interesting.
No more than when I had left. But I'll tell you what, my car is filthy. I don't know why. It's covered in salt.
My car, we had a ton of snow. Then it all melted and it got hot outside. And then it rained. So then my car was freshly washed by God. And then now it's going to... And then it sleeted. Ugh. So then I got some more salt chunks. And now it's going to snow again. I don't even know what the point of getting it washed would be.
I think you should burn it in a fire.
That's a good idea. I can do insurance fraud.
Yes, yes, insurance fraud. It's perfect when you talk about that publicly before you do it. Just announce it.
Well, there's no way that anyone will ever know about this. It's only you and I and one person listening.
You don't think insurance adjusters are like our core audience? Like,
so you don't... Okay, but in this scenario, the insurance adjuster, who, according to the movies I've seen, do insane investigations in order to prove that the poor bastard who's been paying all of this money to the insurance company shouldn't have any of it back. But they're going to be like, okay, we're going to listen to every single episode of the podcast to make sure that she didn't mention committing insurance fraud.
Bare minimum, bro. They're going to start with the podcast. That's easy before they go like rifling through your underwear drawer, which is the next step down. Mm-hmm. These people are freaks.
If I do burn the car in a fire, I'll simply come back here and tell you to cut this little section out. It'd be no problem.
Armin, do you hear that? Armin's our producer. Armin, stop burping. Start clipping at once. Ah! Oh my God!
Oh my God!
Folks, that was a live burp on air by our producer.
Wait, can you burp on command, Armin?
Yes.
Wow. Can you burp the alphabet?
Yes, but not on air.
Whoa, dude, that is wild. You know what, the youth of America, am I right, folks?
The youths, yeah.
Wow, we can't trust them. Anyway, well, I'm glad that it's picking up at your workplace. Maybe people are over, you know, I mean, usually like Super Bowl, Valentine's Day busy, Super Bowl not so busy. People were confused. Now they're getting back in action. They're like, it's time to go eat. What do you serve at your restaurant? Nachos?
I wish. No, just like, I don't know, American food, but not really. I don't really know.
I have to go get some vaguely American food.
Elevated hipster cuisine.
Perfection.
It was weird, though, because of the Super Bowl being the same weekend as Valentine's Day, which usually doesn't happen. Usually the Super Bowl is the first week of February, but because they had to add extra games or whatever this year, we had like a weird scenario because Valentine's Day was on a Monday, which we're closed on Monday.
Mm.
And we did not open for Valentine's Day. And Sunday was the Super Bowl, which is, you know, the day before Valentine's Day. So we didn't know what was going to happen, if maybe people would come in anyway. But they did not. But they came in Friday and Saturday, but not Sunday.
Very, very interesting. Yes. The Super Bowl, folks, classically the slowest day of the entire year for restaurants. I think it's strange. The Super Bowl is boring. Why do so many people watch it?
So many people, like, don't watch it.
That's exactly right.
So I don't understand why we would be so dead. But yeah, I stopped by our restaurant on Sunday and there were very few human beings in there besides me.
Are you getting excited about spring?
Well, no. I mean, spring isn't going to, it's not going to be warm out until like May.
That's true. Now, I'm going to share something with you and our listeners, which you might already know about me. Folks, I hate spring. I don't like it at all. I don't like the colors. I don't like the allergies. I'm not interested in spring animals, spring holidays. Flowers are fine, obviously. I find it too like hot and then cold and then hot and then cold. I'm always sneezing. It's not for me. I don't like it at all.
I don't think it even gets hot in spring. It's freezing and sleeting. And people are like, every time someone says spring is my favorite time of year, I'm like, What are you talking about?
Those people are psychopaths. We can't trust those people.
You like sleeting? Yeah. You like going outside and it's 50 degrees and then in that same day it'll turn to 20 degrees and you're not wearing socks?
Right. Or like my problem with spring is that some days it's like 80 degrees, but then the next day it's 30 degrees and it's like impossible to like know what to wear. You always are like carrying around a big sweater, but then you're like hot. It's stupid. I think we should get rid of it, which I think global warming is doing for us.
Yeah, it's trying. Thank you. It's darndest, yeah.
Everyone's out here being like, global warming is terrible. All these fucking conservative people don't believe it. And you know what I say? I say, thank the Lord for global warming because we don't have to deal with spring anymore. Or winter or fall.
Or being able to live or breathing the air. Or the fact that New York City will be, you know, underwater in 3 months.
That's fine. I love swimming.
Okay, well, I have some Denver news, a very small tidbit because
thank God I thought you would never.
We had a big update last week, so there can't be any news this week. The news is that Jennifer Garner says it's totally fine if Bennifer get engaged. She doesn't give a fuck.
She said, I don't give a fuck.
No, I don't think she swears in real life.
She said, I don't give a fudge.
She's like, I don't give a darn if that old father of my three children with all bad eyesight can get married whenever he wants.
She's like, let that fucking back tattoo be someone else's problem already.
Literally,
I'm trying to live my life. I can't fucking still believe that man has that back tattoo. That's one of the craziest things I've ever seen. And like, don't these people have handlers? No one was like, absolutely not, Ben. He's like, but look, it's a phoenix rising from the ashes, just like me.
He's like, the ashes are literally Jennifer Garner, and I hope she doesn't get mad at me for saying that.
It's a phoenix rising out of my butt crack, reaching towards my brain. And we're like, why don't you just get a poster of that and put it in your, you know, office man cave?
You don't have to keep it in your house. Just put it in your office.
He's like, nah, put on my back.
You probably spend one day a month or something.
You know how much fucking makeup this guy must have to go through? He should just get a whole new back, which I'm sure is possible for famous rich celebrities because, like, I'm sure they're paying, like, I don't know, a makeup artist, like,
$10,000
a day to, like, cover up that back tattoo.
Yeah, probably not $10,000, but he could just get a back transplant, you're right. Maybe they just do a little, like, prosthetic back and just, like, kind of attach it onto his back.
A back transplant? So invasive. That's major surgery.
Well, I feel like it's either that or the back prosthetic, which maybe is an easier thing because, they can do amazing things with all sorts of prostheses these days for film.
Sure. You know what I think? They should just add another front. America's first double-fronted famous movie star.
Yeah, that would be interesting for sure.
The man with two fronts. That's
Do we even see him shirtless in movies ever?
No, but we could if double time if he had two fronts.
Right, they wouldn't even have to get a body double because then he would always just be facing forward.
Oh my God, America's two double-fronted movie star, Ben Affleck. Guys, you heard it here first. Ben, if you're listening, please. This is a trademark. I'd like to do the surgery myself. Copyright. All right, Nicole, speaking of Ben Affleck, our topic today is famous presidents and what they like to eat.
Yeah, obviously Zara picked this topic because she's obsessed with what you guys clamor to hear about. Wars, presidents.
I love presidents, guys. I think all presidents, a pag.
All presidents are great.
Yes, all presidents are great. Every last one of them better than the next. And they seem to just be getting better ever since Obama. You have Trump, fabulous. And then Joe Biden, who obviously everybody loves.
He is beloved and also apparently his reanimated dead body is running for next year's election.
Get the fuck up out of here.
Yeah.
Two disgusting old fucking fascists, Trump, like, Biden, a rematch.
On my 100th birthday, I want to be president of the United States. I will never die.
Oh, what a horrible idea. Guys, this was a bad idea to begin with. That's just gotten worse. It's like having Bernie from Weekend. And not good Bernie, not Bernie Sanders. Like Bernie from Weekend at Bernie's being like, let's make a trequel, a trilogy, or whatever. A quadruple.
Yes, a trequel is definitely a word that people use all the time to describe a trilogy.
Time for Biden, the trequel. Well, I don't know what to say.
Well, I picked our most hottest president for mine. I'm just kidding. He is not that great looking. Well, now he's a skeleton. But I picked Woodrow Wilson, who was a teeny bit more racist than I realized. But that should not come as a surprise since he was just our 28th president. It was the teens, the 19-teens. Being racist was very hip and cool back then.
Seems to be coming back into fashion, bigger and better than ever.
So, yeah, I got some fun facts because the food stuff about him is not enough to fill a whole period of time to talk about. But I was committed to the bit, and so now I had to roll with it. So, 20th president, Woodrow Wilson. Obviously, he's dead, but he was super old anyway because his first memory is hearing that Abraham Lincoln was nominated or voted president. So he's so old. He's so old. When President Lincoln became president, he was alive.
Your Woodrow Wilson's so old, he remembers looking at... Sorry, I can't even finish that one. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
He was the last of our beautiful presidents to arrive at the inauguration by horse-drawn carriage because I guess the horseless carriage took over after that. I don't know. I'm assuming.
A self-driving carriage, but called a car.
I'm just putting it together here. They called it the horseless carriage back then, Zara. I don't know if you've ever seen an old-timey movie, but they talk about it a lot.
A horseless carriage driven by a headless horseman.
Yes. Unfortunately, the man who we elected to be the most powerful man in the country was anti-integration. He enforced the whites-only bathrooms in the White House. He kicked somebody out when they became too argumentative with him about the civil rights movement.
Woodrow Wilson did this?
Yes.
God.
He eventually became the president of Princeton, in which during that time, no black students were admitted. And there were, during the civil rights movement, students had a sit-in at Princeton where they requested that all of the like memorabilia and dedications to Woodrow Wilson be removed. And Princeton was like, no, thank you. We're going to keep these around.
Princeton.
Yes.
Cool. Shocking. Super cool. Princeton. Shocking. Yes. Very shocking.
Not only are we going to keep these around, we're going to raise tuition to pay for their upkeep. Ugh. He was not all bad, though. He's like, women should vote.
Okay.
He initially was indifferent because, you know, why not? He's busy. But there were a bunch of suffrage protesters outside the White House who were like dragged off and arrested. And they did, then they had a hunger strike and they were being force fed, which sounds horrifying.
It's like foie gras. It's fine.
Totally. Yes. And so it says in this article that I read that he was horrified by this. I don't think he actually did anything about it. But a year later, he advocated for chicks to get the vote in front of Congress. And 2 years later, they were able to vote. So it probably has something to do with him. Who knows? He was the first. Okay, we're back to the bad stuff. He was the first user of the screening room at the White House.
Didn't he screen Birth of a Nation?
Yes, he did. He screened Birth of a Nation, which has been called, and I quote, the most reprehensibly racist film in Hollywood history.
Right. And did also like won an Oscar. So just think about that next time you tune in to watch Eminem sing Lose Yourself at the Academy Awards.
Okay. But in addition to being racist, he was a lovable kook. He had sheep on the White House lawn, which was shocking back then. And it would be shocking now.
That's cute. It would be shocking at any time. A bunch of sheep just running around. For what reason? Just because he liked the look of it. They're woolly bottoms.
Well, it was 1915. I feel like it was a different time, but mostly because of what he will talk about later, his food will win the war movement. He was like, hey, these sheep are eating my grass, which cannot be cut by men because they're fighting in the war, and I'm going to sell their wool and give the money to charity, blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
Okay, so in addition to being a racist, lovable, sheep-loving kook, this man was in a love triangle.
What the hell? With Ulysses S. Grant and Abraham Lincoln?
No.
He
married a woman, but while they're married, he took solo trips to Bermuda, where he fraternized with Mary Peck. Okay.
What the fuck?
After they were done fraternizing, they had a years-long pen pal affair while he was in the White House. Then his wife died. And instead of getting together with Peck, he got together with a different bitch.
What? The classic Woodrow. With a name like Woodrow, who's surprised, really?
Yeah. And then, so Mary was like, this is a bummer, but she didn't really do anything about it. And Wilson's handlers lied and said that Peck was going to sell the love letters, but so that he wouldn't get married so soon to this other lady. After his wife died. But instead, he just came clean to this new gal and was like, listen, I used to fraternize in Bermuda. What do you say? And she's like, I'll marry you anyway, bro. It's totally chill.
Sure.
And then famously, according to Drunk History, so he had a stroke while he was in office. And she, his new wife, Edith, basically like hid that from everyone. And basically for 17 months was the acting president of the United States, non-elected, which is, I think, pretty cool. She did some cool stuff. I didn't have time to look up. You just really need to watch the Drunk History. It gets into
who much does more the, who does it? Who is there a guest on it?
Yeah, but I don't remember who
it was. No one special.
But I think there's famous people in it, but I saw it a long time ago. But,
okay, got it.
Then, yeah, so for 17 months, he had a stroke. He was literally, like, completely incapacitated, and they hid it for 17 months, which I think is very cool.
That's amazing. What a cover-up.
And that's what's happening now with Joe Biden. anyway, moving on, he started this Food Will Win the War campaign, which basically, during the First World War, even though we were not officially allies with Europe, we were unofficial allies, we provided them with a ton of food to feed their troops, and to the point where we ran out of American food for Americans to eat. And so they were like, oh no, we need to tell everyone to eat less. So they started this program called Food Will Win the War, which was a propaganda campaign led by Herbert Hoover.
Hoover, I hardly know her.
But it led to Americans eating 15% less, which I think is crazy because in the 1915s, I feel like people weren't even eating a lot to begin with.
Totally.
You know, everyone was like skinnier back then.
Absolutely.
And so, yeah, 15% reduction. Meatless Monday was invented because of that. And Wheatless Wednesday was invented so that people would eat less wheat so they could send it to the troops. He also had this kind of creepy like propaganda aimed at immigrants. And it was like, you came here seeking freedom. In order to preserve that freedom, you need to eat less and support our troops.
Wow.
So then this, of course, rolled over into World War II. And Food Will Win the War became a wonderful short film produced by Walt Disney. And then, you know, all the rationing and things that we know about from World War II, which I think we've covered in our wars episode.
Yes, our World War II episode. Just wait, we're coming back at you with World War I pretty soon.
And yeah, it's pretty interesting. They also, Hoover invented this wheat alternative called Hoover wheat.
Hoover wheat? I hardly know her.
I'm sure he didn't actually invent it, but it's just interesting what people can do. But it's also just interesting that they were like, Americans will want to sacrifice their food for the troops, which is probably true at the time. But
yeah,
the whole propaganda thing was really interesting.
They would probably still sacrifice their food for the troops, but they won't wear a tiny piece of cloth in front of their face for the people that live next door to them.
That's true.
But the troops.
That's all I have about good old Woody Wilson.
Woody Woodpecker Wilson?
Yes.
Amazing. Well, you know what? I don't know that I have ever heard anyone named Woodrow before.
Yep. He's the only one, I think.
Do you think there's any other Woodrows? If you're out there, prove it. Call into the show if you're a Woodrow. We'd like to hear from you.
Yeah, we don't want to slander you by saying that you don't exist.
Right. You may exist, but I don't know about you. That's for sure.
Maybe right. Woody Harrelson's real first name is Woodrow.
Woodrow Harrelson?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll allow it. I believe it. And I like it. Okay, great. Well, on that note, let's take a break. Regroup. When we come back, we'll have more information about presidents. It's President's Day, folks. This wasn't just random. Okay. Goodbye.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Hello. Hello. We're back. Nicole, are you with
me? We're back.
Tell me if you're with me. All right. So I do believe APAB, all presidents are bastards. However, there is one president that despite his bastardness, I truly have a soft spot for. And I think it's because I have a fascination with like the 1960s and the kind of barred nostalgia for that time period. We're talking about the presidents of the United States of America, the band. Just kidding. We're talking about President John Falcor Kennedy. That was his real middle name.
Falcor?
John Flaming Lips Kennedy. John Fitzgerald Kennedy. My favorite president. And yours? If you had to pick a favorite president, who would it be?
I don't know. I guess. Sure, why not?
Okay, great. I mean, FDR.
He's the sluttiest president.
He is the sexiest and sluttiest president. And what's not to like about that? Okay, so before I get into this, I just want to mention one funny thing that I read just looking at presidents and food. And it says, Calvin Coolidge inexplicably referred to any and all meals as supper, even if it was breakfast time.
Inexplicably.
Inexplicably. I don't know. I guess no one ever asked, hey, Cal, what's this all about?
Yo, CC, what's the deal?
CC, what up? And he was the originator of CNC Music Factory. It was Calvin Coolidge Music Factory. The Roosevelts famously served hot dogs to the King and Queen of England. Faux pas, folks.
Faux pas.
That's a major faux pas.
Sorry, I have to cough.
That's fine. I know, it's shocking.
That's probably why the queen has COVID right now.
Exactly. She got it all the way back then. It stuck with her. And a menu for the state dinner for the crowned heads of Greece, given by the Eisenhower administration, reads as depressing as any unemployment figures. Toasted Triscuits, fish and cheese sauce, and sliced lemon, spelled with two M's.
Lemon.
Okay, folks, I got most of my information today from history.com, which I spelled out history, D-O-T-C-O-M, for some reason. John Falcor Kennedy was born on the 29th of May in the year of our Lord, 1917. So he's very old.
He was born when Woodrow Wilson was in office. Whoa,
that's crazy. He was very old. He would be very old now. He was sadly very young when he passed away. Far too young, 46 years old. He was the 35th president of the United States. And before becoming so, he served as a journalist, a congressman, a senator from the great state of Massachusetts.
Journalist in quotation marks.
Journalist, quote unquote. He dabbled in journalism.
He wrote a book, but he didn't really write it.
He wrote the Book of Love. He used to be his pen name was Jacqueline Suzanne. Oh my God. Becky and I went upstate this weekend. This is a total sidebar, but we're sitting in this like very cutesy bakery, like sharing a cookie and a coffee. And it was like super cutesy. Like it was all pink inside. And it was meant to look like a tea room where you'd go, like if you were a little kid and you could imagine like your perfect tea. and there was like kids' toys, and there was like books all over. And there's this one bookshelf with every single book that Dean Koontz had ever written.
What?
So shocking.
I was like, what? That doesn't make any sense.
Behind you, the Koontz. They're Koontz fanatics here.
Wild.
Really weird. Okay. So anyway, JFK serves in the Navy from 1941 to 1945. He's terribly hurt during this time with injuries that would like persist, I think, through his presidency. He had a terrible back. Some people explain it as he basically had a hole in his back that never was closed. Just a gaping permanent wound in his back.
Yeah, I heard that too. And yeah, and he also had trouble walking sometimes.
Yeah, and he also had colitis, which is terrible. So he was very unhealthy, but very attractive. And somehow he still got a lot of ladies, even with an open hole in him.
He's like, please don't put anything in there. Just act as though it's not there.
Don't look at the hole. Don't touch the hole. Don't lick the hole. No fingering the hole. And at the same time,
we do not want all holes filled here in this scenario.
At the same time, he's spraying diarrhea everywhere from his colitis, which
all
is really
Marilyn
no joke.
Monroe.
Yes, all over Marilyn Monroe's face, but she was into that. Allegedly. Okay, anyway, enough about that. He serves as president from 1961 to 1963. He is the first elected Catholic president, which is very contentious for the time, as we all know. It seems very weird now that that would be a problem, but as some of us may know, Catholics were really frowned upon during this time period.
You know, it's so bizarre that...
What's the difference even? I have no idea even the difference. Is it just because like Irish people were tended to be Catholic and we hated Irish people so much long
ago?
Probably.
I don't really know. I'm sure there's been billions of articles written about this.
I choose to ignore most of religion and pay no attention to it. So this is something I don't understand and I'm probably never going to. This is not where I'm going to spend my time.
Well, it probably has something to do with class, right? Because WASPs are Protestant. It's in their name. So technically the Kennedys would not be WASPs.
And you mean by WASPs the bug?
No. White Anglo-Saxon
no, I'm
Protestant.
Kidding.
They were WASPs because they're Catholic.
Oh God, that's so funny. WASPs the bug. The bug. Okay, sorry. Anyway. So back to talking about Kennedy. Are you ready to get into this story?
Yes, I'm so ready.
Okay, fabulous. That was just a little bit of a backstory. So as I mentioned, Kennedy was a war hero, quote unquote, if that's even a thing. After Lieutenant Kennedy was torpedoed by the Japanese during World War II, Kennedy led his surviving crew to an island where they sought shelter and ate coconuts. The following morning, Kennedy and one of his crewmates swam to another island where they found a box of Japanese provisions containing crackers and candy. So this is just a small food moment from his time as a warmongering war hero. Okay. So there's this whole thing about how when he was in Berlin giving an address that he called himself a jelly donut, that he said, Ich bin ein Berliner, which like translates to I am a jelly donut.
Mm.
But apparently like, he actually said it right. But for decades and decades, the people of Berlin have been laughing at him, saying that he called himself a jelly donut, which I think is hilarious.
I thought a Berliner was cream filled, but I guess it's
jelly filled. Who knows what they're doing over there? I think the toilet's flushed the other way.
The internet says that it's a German donut with no central hole. So...
Well, that doesn't describe Kennedy because we all know he does have a central hole
in
his back, which is dripping. It probably looks like a jelly donut.
He was telling the truth.
He's like, I'm trying to tell you I have jelly dripping out of the hole in my back.
Yes, and no central hole. I don't know where it is. It's not centrally located. If it was, I'd probably be dead.
Okay. So before the Kennedys arrive in the White House in the year 1961, it's pretty stodgy in there, right? It's stuffy. They're all eating turtle soup and fucking meatloaf. God knows what else. No one's really having any fun. No one's having sex. It's boring. It's stupid. It's full of dust. Enter Jacqueline Kennedy and Jack Kennedy, the Jacks.
Onassis.
The Jacks. Well, she wasn't yet an Onassis. She became an Onassis later. She, at that time, she was just barely escaped being a Bouvier. So anyway, Jackie was a bit of a Francophile, which for you lay people means she loved all things French.
And which means she probably will eat turtle soup then.
That's true. She liked turtles. She liked things in shells. It just had to be classy. So the Kennedys changed the kind of whole vibe there. Jackie Kennedy hires a French chef. His name is René Verdon. And quickly the White House menus change from featuring saltines and beef stew to more sophisticated fare, Nicole. Like
saltines?
Saltines and beef stew are out. In comes, I like them too. In comes sole Veronique and strawberries Romanoff.
Wow.
Fancy, pantsy, schmancy, dancy. So, Chef Verdon's influence was felt throughout the country because people, like, were obsessed with the Kennedys, right? Like, in this time period, they were, like, they wanted to dress like Jackie Kennedy. They really, people were in love with them. Like, and I guess similarly to now, how people feel about the Bidens. Everybody is ripping out their hair and combing it over to the side and walking around with their arms in front of them like a zombie, just like Joe Biden. And people are eating taco salads like their other favorite president, Donald Trump, anyway.
Does he like taco salads? Because I like taco salads, okay, man? They're good.
Taco salads are good, but they were good before him. I don't even think he probably... This motherfucker definitely doesn't eat the bowl, and that's the best part. So... his influence is felt throughout the country, and at the same time, like, people start going fucking cuckoo for French food, right? It's, like, everywhere. And Julia Child has the French chef, and more Americans become interested in dining à la française. So it's kind of like, you know, when we see all those, like, things and aspics and jellies in, like, the 60s and 70s and stuff like that, like... This is what was on menus, and it was largely due to the Kennedys.
I didn't know the Kennedys were to blame.
Yes. what's his name? René Verdon says, quote, "Miss Kennedy had tastes as cosmopolitan as my own. The president's tastes were somewhat heartier when he was permitted to indulge them. Mr. Kennedy was very fond of the tiny quiches he had for his lunch. President Kennedy did enjoy cold beer, and Mrs. Kennedy favored the daiquiri."
Ooh, I do love a daiquiri.
Me too. He says this in the White House Chef's Cookbook. So, being party animals that they were, the Kennedys install a bar in the state dining room, complete with butlers to shake and pour martinis and bourbon. Instead of the usual 5 to 6 course dinner, Jackie streamlines the meals, so there's only 4 courses. And that was to leave enough time for a post-dinner entertainment and conversation, a.k.a. a key party.
That's probably true.
I know. So funny. And then men and women mingled freely after Kennedy dinners, whereas in previous years, the men would go off to, like, you know, a smoking room, and the women would go off to some, like, tea parlor, fancy tea parlor, and read Dean Koontz books.
Aloud to each other.
Perhaps the most celebrated, this is kind of the crux of my story. So according to history, DOT.com, perhaps the most celebrated White House dinner of the Kennedy years was held at President Washington's Grand House, Mount Vernon, in honor of the president of Pakistan. On July 11th, 1961, nearly 140 guests joined President and Mrs. Kennedy to honor President Mohammed Ayub Khan of Pakistan and his daughter, Begum Nasir Akar Aurangzeb. Sorry, that is mispronounced. Aurangzeb. Pardon me. I'm going to try it again. Just kidding. I think I got it almost right. Guests were transported down the Potomac on yachts with dance music, played, and champagne freely poured.
Dance music?
Yes, I told you, CNC Music Factory, Calvin Coolidge, she was there.
Okay.
So the night arrives, everyone's on Twitter, and guests are, like, taken down the Potomac by boat from the Washington Navy Yard to Mount Vernon. So there's 4 yachts to bring all these people down. President Kennedy serves as host on the Honey Fitz. Jackie Kennedy accompanies a bunch of other guests aboard a vessel named the Sequoia. A smaller presidential yacht called the Patrick J was sailed with Lyndon Johnson And the remaining guests were hosted by Mrs. Johnson and Secretary of State Dean Rusk in a boat called, in a PT boat called the Guardian.
What's a PT boat?
I don't know. That's what it says here. It sounds like
it's
some kind of
part-time boat.
Like a shit boat. I just think it kept getting worse and worse, right? So then I wrote, Ted Kennedy paddled the most unimportant guests in a canoe.
The part-time boat. It's probably a duck boat. One of those boats that drives on land in Seattle and then also can go into the water.
Right. That sounds about right. All I know is that the least important folks were with Lady Bird Johnson, and then the riffraff went with Ted Kennedy and shotgun beers in his canoe.
I bet that Kennedy got a beach on that boat where he was all alone without Jackie.
100%. His boat was filled with all the hot women, and then everybody else was dispersed amongst the other people. So they have Marines that are lining a path up to Mount Vernon. And someone is quoted as saying, I heard a strange crackling noise as the cars went up the hill and realized that the sound was the wheels of the limousines driving over the toes of the Marines.
What? That's not true.
They just drove over fucking all these people's toes. All these Marines' toes while they just stood there.
This person's probably never driven over gravel before.
Right. He's like, it must have been the toes. What else can make that cracking sound?
If we broke the toes of 300,000 Marines lying in the walkway, we would hear
I know
it.
About it by now. It was a single Marine. Okay. The French meal was prepared in the White House kitchen, and then it gets like brought over to Mount Vernon by military vehicles. So military vehicles were brought over by special. Military vehicles are like refrigerated and heated army trucks.
Our tax dollars at work,
exactly. And the White House chef, Rene Verdon, threatened to go back to France after the army started spraying the area with insect repellent. He was convinced that his food would be poisoned, and he had to be assured that the food was safe by having Secret Service agents eat some of it.
Well, they thought that insect repellent was safe back then, but it wasn't.
Exactly, indeed. And that is actually how President Kennedy passed away. Guests were treated to crab meat and avocado mimosas, poulet chaussier, and fresh local raspberries with whipped cream.
Mm.
Sounds delicious. To cap off the evening, the National Symphony Orchestra gives a concert featuring, what else, a rendition of George Gershwin's An American in Paris. However, there's a problem. The National Symphony Orchestra was all set to play in front of the mansion on a special stage built into the slope leading down in the river. But when they began to rehearse, the music started wafting like behind them. So it like couldn't be heard in the mansion area. And so they had to immediate, like on the fly build, get the National Park Service in to construct an acoustic shell around the musicians so the music could be like funneled back the other way.
Was it the first band shell ever made?
Probably. So
it's funny that they didn't practice this beforehand.
It seems very like all very haphazard. Like, okay, let's spray some insect repellent into the food, and then just
let's drive over all the military escorts.
Just like drive over their toes. Okay, so then the moment comes where like the military salute in front of the mansion. They were like they had practiced. They were doing it with blanks, of course, like muskets, and they would fire smoke filled blanks into the air, but during the rehearsal was no problem. But the day of the event, they ended up firing it into where like the press bin was. So they're just firing muskets at the press. And so
not the first time.
Right. So then President Ayoub turns to President Kennedy and says, quote, I see you feel the same way about the press that we do.
LOL.
Very funny. Hilarious. Talking about killing press. Okay. So that's kind of like a funny story about him and food. Apparently he loves soup, salad, and sandwiches. The everyman, especially, you guessed it, New England clam chowder, which is delicious, but makes me feel sick just thinking about the fact that he had a big open hole in his back, like eating clam chowder. I don't know. For some reason, the mix of the two doesn't work for me.
Well, I feel like it wasn't like a hole in his stomach.
I know. I figured like just squirting out the back, but maybe not.
I don't think he had like a colostomy bag or anything.
Sure. A colostomy bag full of clam chowder. So this is very sadly, and I know I'm making a lot of jokes, but I know this was a really terrible time when I talked to like my parents about what this was like. It's sad. Whenever I see anything about like on Mad Men, when they had the episode when Kenny was killed, it really it makes me sad. But so he's killed in Dallas, Texas, as we know, on November 22nd, 1963, by a one-armed man. The Warren Commission insisted he acted alone, but Kevin Costner isn't buying it.
Yeah. The grassy knoll, you dudes.
The knoll, people. La knoll. The night before he died, he goes to a 3,200-person banquet at the Rice Hotel in Houston and recalled by a former worker, Rudy Castro, Kennedy's last meal was a simple breakfast of soft-boiled eggs, bacon, toast, marmalade, orange juice, and coffee. Rudy Castro says, yeah, that at the banquet, he eats, like, kind of simple food that they had cooked, like some biscuits and some kind of, like, meat. And then when he saw him, he looked like a movie star.
3,200 people at a banquet, it seems mental. How do you even make that much food?
I don't know. We should know. This show is called Life's a Banquet. Life's a Banquet with 3,200 people was the original name. We changed it to simplify. Life's a 3,200-person banquet. Figure it out.
Oh, my God.
It's funny. It's funny. So, anyway, that's my story about Kennedy. I thought it was pretty good.
Very good. I like avocado with crab in it. We should bring that back.
That's fucking good. That's good eating. That's eating good in the neighborhood. Even someone with a hole in them could enjoy something like that.
Absolutely. That is right. Hopefully the avocados were ripe, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And not overly ripe, because that would be an American tragedy.
Like, for 140 people, somebody got an unripe avocado.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. So, top three favorite presidents, Nicole. Just
kidding. I don't have one of those. There is a president from Indiana who died after 32 days in office.
Oh, right. Who is that president? Damn it.
Harrison.
Right. George Harrison of the Beatles.
William Henry Harrison? No, I don't know. All we know is his last name is Harrison. He was only in office for 32 days. He got pneumonia during a way too long speech in the middle of, like, a snowstorm or something.
Yeah, that's what happens.
If you're interested, you can come to Indianapolis and look at his old house where he used to live. It's right down around the corner from, well, from where I used to live, not from where I am right now.
I am interested. Psych. My favorite presidents are JFK, FDR, and of course, Taft, because he became stuck in a bathtub, which to this day amazes me. I don't know how you get stuck in a bathtub. It seems like no matter how large you are, it seems like there's such a big opening at the top. It's not like it cinches at the top. So I don't understand how it happened, but I love the story.
I thought he probably just couldn't get up.
He didn't really get stuck. That's, like, probably the wrong way of explaining it.
Yeah.
I think of it being, like, stuck, like, you know what I mean? Like, wedged in there and he can't be pulled out. Like, if a ring gets stuck on your finger or something, except it's a president in a bathtub.
And they had to put, like, mayonnaise on it to get him out.
Yes. Mayonnaise and bathwater together. What a yucky combination. Ew. Disgusting. Yeah. I can say my, like, least favorite president. I mean, there's so many bad presidents. Basically every one of them. It was hard to pick a least favorite, but I do have some other funny food memories about presidents that maybe we could just talk about for a second. And when I was talking the other day about doing the show, I'm like, oh, maybe I should do the time when George Bush, H.W. Bush, threw up on the prime minister of Japan.
Oh yeah, that's what you said you were gonna do.
But I, like, there's not a lot about it. And, like, I think he just had, like, a stomach flu.
He had a tummy ache.
He had a tum-tum ache.
He had tummy trouble.
Yeah, and there was big trouble in little Japan for him. And then, you know, I don't know what the fuck George W. Bush likes to eat, because he just does so much cocaine, he probably doesn't even eat. And we already know about Nixon and his fucking freaky cottage cheese and ketchup.
Yeah, I don't think there's a lot of popular food facts. Jimmy Carter was a peanut farmer.
Jimmy Carter, peanut farmer. Jimmy Carter, peanut butter, peanut cotta. That's how we practice our Australian accent, by saying those two things. Jimmy Carter, peanut farmer, peanut butter, peanut cotta. It's good, right?
Yeah.
Also, peanut butter, peanut cotta would probably be good. I like smushy things.
I just don't like peanut butter for dessert.
I do. What about a Reese's peanut butter cup? That's a dessert.
Yeah, but not really.
More of a snack.
Like, here and now for dessert, we're having this peanut butter cup on a plate.
Mega peanut butter cup.
But you have to eat with a fork and knife.
Oh my God, dude. Speaking of peanut butter things, freaking Trader Joe's now sells a snack that is so delicious. It's like a peanut shape. It's like the shape of like a peanut in a shell.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like milk chocolate. And inside is like this very salty, creamy, delicious peanut butter and little crunchies.
Whoa.
Oh my God. So, so good. Really, like
Trader Joe's has really good peanut butter cups too. The mini ones,
yes, their peanut butter, their dark chocolate peanut butter cups are like so fabulous. Yummy. Okay, well, I liked this episode. I thought it was very funny, and
we did a good job.
I learned about Woodrow Wilson.
Yes,
yes,
our hottest president.
Who do you think the hottest president was? Was it Kennedy?
I don't know. I can't picture 80% of our presidents.
I'm looking at a picture of him right now because, as you know, I do have a few portraits of Kennedy in my house. And I'm looking at one right now, and I would give a dog a bone for sure.
Sure.
If he's good enough for Marilyn Monroe. And
sure.
8,000 other women. He's good enough for me.
8,000. 3,200 banquet members cannot be wrong. He boned all of them, ladies and gentlemen.
All right. Well, great episode. Love you very much. Happy President's Day, everyone. It was yesterday, but I hope you had a great time celebrating and not having your trash picked up or getting your mail. Okay, that's it. Bye.
Life's Banquet is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org, or connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click at the heart at the top right of our homepage. And thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.